You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Well, we had an election take place in Italy that could be a game changer. The euro is sinking like a stone. And like the guy said in the movie, we're going to need a bigger boat. But in this case, we need the bigger boat so we can break it up for firewood in Europe. There's a run on firewood and they're almost out. Well, here to examine all this is our good friend John Rubino, and founder of Dollar Collapse and author. You know him well. So, John, what do you make of all the goings on in Europe and the euro, which continues to sink like a stone? I mean, the dollar today, it's September 26th. Dollar is trading at 114 on the Dixie.
Hey, Carol. Yeah. The strong dollar is kind of the flip side of Europe's crisis right now. So let's start with Europe. And there's a lot of news coming out of the continent right now. And the kind of funniest one, although it's not funny for the people who are involved in it, but Europe has screwed up their energy system so completely that they're now going back to like firewood and wood pellets and things like that. So in other words, they're trying to run a modern economy on ancient energy sources. And it's not going well for them. There's a firewood shortage in France and across the rest of Europe in general. But, you know, what's going to happen to their forests if this keeps up? It's horrible to think about. And what's going to happen this winter if people are already relying on wood for their energy? So we'll see. But this looks like a story that's going to continue for a while because it's the weather's pretty nice right now, you know. Wait till it gets really cold, and then we'll see. And because there's no fix on the horizon for their energy problems that's going to happen this winter. So today's conditions are going to continue as the temperatures drop, and then it's, you know, who knows? Anyhow, that's one thing. Overnight, last night, pound sterling dropped to 1.04 yes. pounds to the dollar. And that's down from £1 equaling $2 in 2007. So it's lost 50% of its value in this cycle, in this expansion. Again, there's no obvious end to this because they've screwed up their own economy in their own unique way. And I think what caused the immediate, most recent drop in pound sterling was that the new prime minister came out with big tax cuts. In other words, old style conservative governance where you cut taxes on the rich and hope that it trickles down. And the problem now is that when you do that, you have to borrow money to cut taxes because you're already running a massive deficit if you're a modern economy, which means you've got to create more new currency to cover the debt that you're taking on, which means is, you know, everybody's paying attention to the effects of that now. That means more inflation. So you can't get away with these old style tools for manipulating the next election and pacifying the electorate, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's interesting to watch the old things fail. And what else was happening? Oh, and as you mentioned, the euro is down to below a dollar now. It's yeah. 97 cents. The euro was $1.57 in 2008. So it's also crashing. So Europe is kind of the epicenter of the financial crisis. We got it bad here in the U.S., but Europe has a much bigger, much more immediate problem with no real fix in sight because the mistakes they made cannot be fixed with monetary policy or easy money in general. And that's all they've got. You know, you can't tighten and fix the existing problems, but you kind of have to tighten if you're the European Central Bank because you've got inflation running at like 10%. Last week, an interesting thing happened. Germany announced its PPI, its Producer Price Index, was rising at an annualized rate of 60-some percent. That's Germany. So crisis over there and no real fix in sight. So very interesting.
Yeah, it is that for sure. And like you say, there is no there's no end in sight to this, is there?
Well, there are no tools left with which to fix our current problems, because you can't use monetary policy to find more oil, right? Or natural gas. You can't do that. Or wheat, or you know, anything that's real. Monetary policy doesn't fix that. It only elevates financial asset crisis. And it used to be, for our entire adult lifetimes, basically, the central bank could cut interest rates, which would make stocks, bonds, and real estate go up, which via the wealth effect would make the economy grow, and that would basically fix things. Excuse me.
Yes.
And it made the central bankers look like they actually understood what was going on, and they had a handle on it, and they were brave, and they were confident.
Once upon a time.
Really, all they were doing was just moving an interest rate down to a slightly lower level and letting financial asset prices respond to it, which is really nothing when you think about it. That's the equivalent of tax cuts from a fiscal standpoint, right? Easiest thing in the world to do, requires no expertise, no understanding of the world. And for most normal times, it gives you a good return politically. And so that's what the Federal Reserve has been doing since, well, let's say the 1990s, since the days of Alan Greenspan. And there was a crisis of any kind, they would cut interest rates and flood the system with liquidity, and the system would right itself. Well, now we've got inflation and broken supply chains. Neither one of those things can be fixed with easy money. And in fact, inflation is made much worse, obviously, by easy money. So the central banks of the world are just stuck. They have nothing to do. And they're trying to fight inflation, which is exactly the wrong thing to do if you want to protect the stock markets, keep them from crashing and keep housing from crashing, and try to get the economy growing via the wealth effect. But rising interest rates is the antithesis of that goal. You know, it makes it much harder to achieve those goals. And so they're stuck. They're in a box that they can't get out of, with absolutely no tools to fix today's problems. And the financial markets are starting to figure that out. You know, like you said, the dollar is at its all-time high against some of these currencies, and multi-year highs against most others. Because as bad as it looks in the U.S., it looks worse in most other countries. So money is flowing from, you know, China and Russia and Brazil and most of Europe into dollars. That's pushing up the dollar versus these other currencies, but the dollar is still being depreciated at a near double-digit rate every year. So by the real measurement, by purchasing power, the dollar is crashing, but it's holding up very nicely against these other currencies that are even crashing faster. So that's why equities are in a bear market. That's why bonds are in a bear market. Interesting segue from there to the 60-40 portfolio, which is the way you made money relatively safely, again, for our entire adult lifetimes. Yeah. You put 60% of your money in the broad-based equity portfolio, 40% in bonds, and they kind of offset each other. And over time, they went up, and you made money. And that's a catastrophe right now, because bonds are crashing. That's what, when we say interest rates are going up, it's the same thing as saying bonds are crashing. And stocks are in a bear market now. So you've got a 60-40 portfolio, everything you own is down.
It's down.
And in some cases, it's down big. So a whole generation of investors who thought they were smart and money managers who had the easiest job in the world are just petrified right now.
Yeah, the only stock that's doing somewhat okay these days is Tesla, right?
I know. I guess we should revisit my short on Tesla. You know, I was forced out of that because the option expired. Earlier in the summer, yeah, so it was at a small loss, as opposed to the bigger one that would have come if I'd stuck around and been there for the stock split, which made the stock go up. But, you know, it's still a great short. What can I say? Anything in the clean tech space right now is very risky, which you wouldn't think, because all the governments of the world are pouring money into alternative energy. Mm-hmm. But what's happening is the transition can only happen as fast as all the different pieces can come along, because there's a lot of moving parts to, say, going electric with cars or putting solar panels everywhere and generating most of our electricity through solar. Those things will eventually happen. But, you know, you have to have enough lithium and cobalt and zinc and copper, for instance, to do the car thing. And for solar, the cost of solar has to continue to fall to make it economically viable in a lot of places where it's currently not. Those days will come, but you can't force that. You know, you can't subsidize solar in places like this. That's what Germany found out. They, you know, they used government money to put solar and wind power all over the place in a place where the sun doesn't shine that much.
You know, the market's got to handle energy transitions.
Yeah. Otherwise,
we'll wind up with brown energy like they had in New York before the good old horse and buggy, you know, before that came around, right? Before the horseless carriage came around.
Yes. Yeah. You can't make these things happen any faster than they can happen. And, you know, we don't have enough copper to do that yet. We don't have enough cobalt, and among many other things. And so we have to, you know, identify heretofore undiscovered deposits of those things, get all the permitting and all the studying done, mm-hmm. and then start a mine. And that's a decade long process. In
or 20.
Yeah, or 20, depending on the environmental assessments and yeah. You know all the other stuff that goes along with mining now, because nobody wants a copper mine in their neighborhood, you know, of course. So there's only a small part of the world in which you can mine stuff anymore.
Yes.
And so we have to find, let's say, three times as much copper as we're now currently mining in those limited places, those very high-cost places in a lot of cases, And then do all the things it takes to get that copper before we can have 50% of the cars be electric, you know, and that will all happen. You know, we'll figure out all of this stuff over time, but we can't make it happen. And there are two things to draw from that. One is that, you know, a lot of the clean tech companies that have been bid up on all the news of these government subsidies probably are pretty good shorts right now. And the copper miners and the, you know, all the miners that, that are looking for and that now have found, especially deposits of the things that go into the clean tech revolution, they're pretty good investments because, you know, we have to have that stuff according to government policy. And so they're going to have the fiscal, yeah, the financial wind is at their back. So, yeah, you know, if you bought just a portfolio of copper miners right now, you'd probably be getting crushed, right, this
month. Yeah, oh, it looks Dr. Copper is taking a hit now, isn't he?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Osino Resources is a Ross Beattie-backed gold exploration company in mining-friendly Namibia. Osino's district-scale land package is situated near two producing gold mines, one of which Osino's management team previously developed and sold to B2 Gold. Osino's founders and management are experienced mining professionals who have already successfully developed and sold two companies in the past 7 years. Osino has an excellent shareholder base with Ross Beattie owning 20%, insiders 5%, and resource capital funds 8%. This is an exploration company with drills turning that you'll definitely want to pay attention to. Osino trades in New York under the ticker OSIIF and in Toronto under the ticker OSI. To learn more, go to osinoresources.com. That's osinoresources.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Well, okay. Let's do the uranium thing and then shift to the idea behind that. Because uranium is another part of the story where a lot of countries are switching back to uranium or switching back to nuclear because of the mess that they've made of their energy system up till now. You know, you can restart a nuclear plant more easily than you can build some new kind of plant. And a lot of these guys have mothballed nuclear. And so you're seeing announcements of new nuclear plants going up everywhere, you know, 5 a year, 10 a year for the foreseeable future. And that's going to make uranium prices go up. So the uranium miners are in the same boat, basically, as copper miners and cobalt and lithium. That we're going to need a lot more of what they have in the ground, and it's going to make them more valuable. So that's another good play. Now that the Dr. Copper, along with all the other commodities, have headed down hard because the economy is suddenly rolling over. That means a couple of really big things. One is that this whole, you know, inflationary boom thing is probably not happening anymore. I mean, if you pull up the chart of pretty much any industrial commodity or agricultural commodity, you see that they peaked in June-ish, And they've rolled over since then, and they're down. In some cases, they're down to the beginning of the year price. In other words, zero inflation in that commodity this year. And at the same time, you've got housing, which is suffering dramatically. I sent you a chart, Carrie. Did you get a chance to see that table? It's an amazing table. I'm going to read from it a little bit.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
In 2022.
Oh, yes. All right. Okay.
You know, the income that you needed, with mortgage rates being what they were and house prices being what they were, in, say, Austin, Texas, to buy the typical house, you needed $160,000 a year of income. Today, oh, I'm sorry, let me flip that around. In 2020, you needed $76,000 of income, which is, you know, a fair bit, but a doable thing. That's why so many houses got bought back then. Today, you need $160,000 of income to buy that same typical house. In, let's see, Seattle, $102,000 in 2020. Now it's $192,000. And that's true for every major city and most of rural America right now. Houses were very expensive 2 years ago, and they're completely unaffordable right now because the price hasn't dropped and mortgage rates have spiked. So if nobody can afford houses, then by definition, nobody can buy houses. So we're going to see an absolute crash in home sales, and then home prices are going to follow crashing home sales. So we'll see a big drop in home prices going forward too. So the takeaway from all of this is that inflation has probably peaked and it's liable to be rolling over pretty soon. And we're going to be afraid of the opposite 6 months from now, I think, you know, with financial asset prices crashing, commodities down, houses down. I think we're getting close to the Fed capitulation point here. Maybe not just yet, but the time will come when the pain that the strong dollar is causing and that higher interest rates are causing and that quantitative tightening is causing becomes unbearable. And they're going to say, all right, you know, maybe inflation over the past year was 8%, but going forward is probably going to be minus 2%. So we're just going to start cutting. And I think we see that pretty soon. You know, they've made a point that it's going to have to go on longer. Tightening is going to have to go on longer because inflation is such a serious problem. But pretty much wherever you look, it's evaporated, inflation has. We've got a few sectors like food where the supply chain is broken. And that's going to be a problem for quite a while. You know, food shortages are going to be with us one way or another for years. But in a lot of other places, inflation is over. And, you know, whatever you're looking at is down from June, and in some cases, down from January. So I think that what's happening out there is in the process of panicking the people who are running the financial system into easing at pretty much any cost. So, you know, let's revisit this in 3 to 6 months, but I think that's where we are.
Will that just be the justification to ease, John, or is there more going on here that we don't know?
Well, tens of trillions of dollars are evaporating from the portfolios of the billionaire class, right? And do we need to know more than that? I mean, who's in control of this world? Those guys are. They're getting crushed right now.
I feel their pain.
Yeah, couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of guys, but they really are getting smashed right now because they own stocks, bonds, and real estate, right? And and all their stuff is crashing right now. So, yeah, you know, I think that because we're kind of on internet time now, we don't have like 3 or 4 year long crises anymore where, you know, you slow down for a year, you contract for a year, you tread water for a year, and you start to recover. I think the reaction to slowdowns is truncated now. I think they're going to react a lot sooner than maybe people give them credit for.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be a fascinating thing to see how this unwinds, because this is basically a global trade that is going to unwind before our very eyes, hitting the people who are being hit the hardest, the billionaire class who can most afford it, put it that way. So I don't know the answer to it, John, but I do know that that in the end, the system works for the people with the money, the billionaire class, if you will, and the, you know, Senta and Deca millionaire class. And when they're starting to feel the pain, then they're going to start pushing buttons, right? They're going to start calling in markers, if you will. And somebody's going to have to do something. And who does the Federal Reserve work for in the end? It was set up as the lender of last resort to the banks to bail out the banking industry in the event of another financial crisis, right?
Well, the Federal Reserve wasn't just set up for the banks. It is owned by the big banks. It is a private sector entity. Jerome Powell is an employee of JP Morgan Chase and Citigroup. So, of course, they work for the banks. And, you know, the banks are going to be suffering big time now because they have portfolios of bonds and they have portfolios of real estate. Private equity has been buying houses for the last few years, ever since like 2008. They started snarfing up all the REOs, all the houses that people had defaulted on and gotten kicked out of.
Yeah, right.
And they've been buying ever since. Well, if real estate peaks, rolls over and starts to crash, they bought all those houses with borrowed money. So the interest rate on their borrowings are going up while the assets that they bought with those borrowed funds are going down. So they're going to be suffering and they're going to insist that the Fed do something about it pretty soon. So I think a big thing. And another reason that the aristocracy is worried is political. You know, you mentioned what happened in Italy, but there's a video of a speech made by Italy's new prime minister, and it is Thatcher-esque. You should check that out on YouTube because it's a spectacular speech, and it is very concise, and it's extremely powerful. This lady is not messing around, and she's aiming her rhetoric directly at the hearts of multinational corporations and their servants. And if that's the kind of person that gets elected now going forward, then we're looking at a revolution. And these guys don't want that either, obviously. So this is going to be a very
revolution.
The peasants are picking up their pitchforks, and that makes 2023 a fascinating year because all of this is going to come to a head. We might have another few months of tightening, and another few months of interest rates going up, and turmoil relating to inflation. Before we have a completely different mirror image economy of a world in turmoil because of the opposite of inflation, because everything is crashing. And politics is going to follow that, which these guys really, do you think George Soros is happy about what happened in Italy? Or even just the people in charge of the EU right now?
Yeah, we can only hope.
And I don't know what President Ron DeSantis would be like in the U.S. exactly, except that he would be a lot of fun because he's got a mean sense of humor and he really understands policy. So it would be hilarious, but I don't know what, on the spectrum of populism, I don't know where he falls really. And so we could end up with Trump again very easily. Could end up with somebody like DeSantis who's, much more of a policy guy and much more willing to troll his enemies. So, I don't know. Anyhow, fascinating time coming.
Yes. No matter how you cut it, a fascinating time ahead. I can't say it's going to be a real pleasant time, but hey, we're going to see things that we never thought, never believed could happen, John. We're going to see this.
Well, Kerry, a lot of the stuff that's happening right now is stuff you and I have been talking about for a long time. It just never happened and never happened. The financial system was supposed to devolve into absolute chaos a decade ago. And it's just now starting to do the things that all that over indebtedness and excessive currency creation should have brought about a lot sooner than this. Yeah. But, crashing currency, spiking interest rates, growing financial market instability, those are all things that should have happened a long time ago, and they were able to hold that consequence at bay with even more easy money. But that spiked inflation, which means easy money is not a possibility right now, which means they can't stop what should have come all along, and now it's finally coming. So I think, in other words, we have seen nothing yet, because what's coming is the collapse of the financial system as we know it. Pound sterling at parity with the dollar. That's astounding. You know, the euro, 97 cents. These are huge deals that are happening right now.
It's shocking.
And they're systemically threatening. So here it comes. And I can only imagine what six more months of today's world would create. You know, it would be unrecognizable to today's viewers.
Well, I guess we've kind of said it all for today, John. And hey, it's interesting times ahead. And look, if you got a question for John, myself, got a comment, how are you dealing with this? We'd like to know how you're dealing with it. What your plans are? Are you stacking gold, silver? What are you doing? Do you have $100 bills in the fireplace? What's going on here with you? Just shoot us an email to kl@carrylutz.com. We'll get to it. Make sure you go over to Dollar Collapse, sign up for the newsletter there, as well as ours, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. And John, hey, when I talk to you in a couple of weeks, I think it's going to be even more interesting.
I think so too. See you, Carrie.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.